Thanks, Peter. Mark, of course, is not here for inviting me here. And it's really a pleasure. First time to UCLA. Today I will tell you a story which contains part of what I've been doing, but it's much more than that, about a fairly recent field of investigations which concerns the applications of mostly physics tools, statistical physics tools, to the domain of social dynamics, to study things like opinion formation, cultural evolution, language origin and evolution, crowd behavior, hierarchy formation, and so on. This is a fairly ancient idea. It was originally conceived back in the 60s in some way, so we go also through that. And in the last years, there have been developments, especially concerning modeling, so the introduction and the study of models, which were addressing kind of yes-no questions. I mean, if I take a group of people, a large group of people, can they, I mean, what are the conditions under which this group of people will agree on a topic or will share a set of conventions, a culture, a language, and so on. But these models were mostly, like I said, qualitative in the sense that they were addressing yes-no questions. But when you want to apply a physics method, mostly, as I say, tools of complex system science, this is much more fashionable to say right now, ideally you would like to be more predictive at the quantitative level. So the thing which is really missing in this field is a real quantitative phenomenology in which you, like physics too, do the experiments, you get some numbers, you find nice relations with these numbers, you do the same experiments again, you find the same relations and so on, and then you can go on with models. Okay? So what I will do today, I will try, so as a general plan, I'll try to launch this idea of building a phenomenology, and I will show you the two only examples I know, one made by us, in fact, specific application on elections, another one by two French scientists, French physicists Michel and Bouchot, concerning opinion dynamics. So concrete examples of what must be done, in my opinion, before proceeding to a real analysis and understanding of social phenomena. This is actually not this Italian, I was telling you that. This is some other Italian, from Pisa, who among many things that he said and wrote, said, measure what is measurable and make measurable what is not so. Okay? So like, you know, opinions, how can you measure opinions, this kind of thing. So let's see, it's probably not completely impossible. So let me make a parallel between physics and society, okay? This is quite a well-known diagram, a classical, I was missing that, in fact. This is the equation of state of several substances in equilibrium, okay? Equation of state is a relation between three variables, temperature, pressure, and volume. So you can show it, of course, on a three-dimensional plot, or you can fix one of these quantities and you plot it in a two-dimensional plot, like this one. So I choose different values of t, and then you get some sections of this surface, okay? Which is the ones you see here. The nice thing about this plot is the fact that there are some characteristic quantities that here are called tc, pc, vc, for each substance, such that if you renormalize temperature, pressure, and v, so by dividing them by these quantities, for these substances, the curve would be exactly the same. You see here, for this TR, all these substances, methane, ethylene, ethane, nitrogen, water, they all have exactly the same equation of state. Although, you know, at the first glance, they're very different things. And it's a very good excuse to model these systems in terms of little balls acting, you know, interacting at a short distance, okay? Same here. This is actually the starting plot of this talk. This is now society. These are elections held, proportional elections held in different countries over a range of 50 years. Italy 1958, 72, 87, Poland 2005, Finland 2003. And what you see here is the histogram of the number of votes received by candidates. So, I mean, I will explain how you renormalize things. That's why you don't see here integers, okay? You see these numbers here. But V is the number of votes received by a candidate. And this is how many candidates get V votes. If you make this histogram across this elections here, you see, you get the same curve. But it's not society. It's not a substance. They are not atoms. They are social atoms, if you want. And it's a good excuse also in this case to use, you know, modeling, simple modeling, to understand what's going to happen. Because at least this aspect is simple. Okay, so it's susceptible to simple mathematical models.
By the way, what are the two extreme points of the...
These ones?
Yeah, those are just winners, I guess.
Yeah, yeah, these are the winners, in fact. No? And these, of course, are...
Is there anything else that's identifiable?
No, no, I mean, what we just done an analysis of bulk behavior, you know, just distribution of this, probably. We already know, quite happy to find this. I mean, in this case, you know, this is a beam plot, of course, so they're not single points. This is not an individual. This includes individuals who got a number of votes in this kind of, in this range.
in the left side?
Here?
Yeah, who are those people?
Losers.
But they've chosen an unusually successful strategy for losing. So
that's what I look at your question. I mean, sorry?
Beyond the fact that they're losers, I mean, are they extremist groups?
No, I don't think so. I mean, the curve is quite continuous, as you can see in this case, right? I mean, this depends also on the way you do the binning. I mean, if I would do this actually really point-like, you know, really collecting a single candidate, you would find a more continuous spectrum. Here I chose also less points since I was supposed to overlap five curves, okay? So there is not a real gap here, actually. So anyway, we'll speak more about this because, like I said, this is the starting plot of this talk. So let me say something about history. This idea of modeling social dynamics in terms of, you know, simple mathematical, like or mechanical terms, is not really new. This is Thomas Hobbes, the Marquis de Condorcet, William Petty, Auguste Comte, Quetelet, that in various forms, they try to, you know, to advance this idea that, you know, completely amazed by the power of Newton mechanics, to find some sort of hidden simple laws of history. That's, of course, very ambitious. And in fact, nothing happened, as you know. But one thing which is interesting about those times is the fact that already at that time, people started to collect social numbers, so statistics about number of births, deaths, crimes, suicides even, and so on. And they realized that in spite of how different populations were, their economies, their histories, and so on, these numbers were fairly stable over the years. And this is actually the reason why these two guys, James Clerk Maxwell and Ludwig Boltzmann, were inspired and, you know, kind of recommended to change the way to change the approach in the study of systems like gases in which you have many particles, and you cannot observe the movement of each particle to describe the system, which you would do instead in Newtonian mechanics, okay? So it's kind of funny that social statistics inspired statistical mechanics, and that 100 years later, physics kind of turns back and tries to use these techniques to try to understand aspects of social dynamics. Like this, for instance, you know? Just be happiness because of the World Cup win of last year's by Italy. So what we want to do here, I mean, of course, is not to understand everything about social dynamics, but how, from individuals which interact locally, global patterns emerge. Like the one thing before, there are many candidates there are millions of voters, but then you see a histogram, and the histogram is the same. But this is, of course, a very risky business, which is the reason why none of these guys that I showed before had any success. Of course, they didn't even have the conceptual tools that we have now, okay, mathematical tools and so on. It's a risky business because, of course, people are not atoms. The interactions are not reproducible. You cannot really exactly replicate what you get in the first instance. And however, I mean, you can kind of, you know, get something interesting, provided the size of the social groups is big enough. Because what you want to analyze here and understand is a large-scale behavior of the system. We cannot know what a group of 10 people is going to do, okay, or 100 people is going to do. But probably what millions of voters do, like you said, is regular and can be understood. Okay, and if you do that, at the end, what the single individuals do is not really important. I mean, it's important for that individual or for his friends, but certainly not for the whole group, for communities. And in particular, as a statistical physicist, but I say as a complex system scientist, the aspects that we are interested in for a quantitative modeling of this stuff are large-scale regularities, things like scaling, so dependence on few variables, universal features, so things which are, you know, kind of independent on choices or parameters that you have in your system, and of course, at the end, ultimately, to reduce the behavior that you observe macroscopically to simple microscopic interactions. That's what we want to do. The thing is that, can you do it here? Can you achieve a kind of quantitative understanding of this? My focus here, and the two examples I will give you, concern opinion dynamics. So opinion dynamics models, and there are plenty of them, really hundreds of them, especially in the last few years, try to explain if and when consensus is formed, okay, starting from people that initially disagree. And the thing is, like I said, I don't think that we should be happy just with this simple qualitative description of the process, just because based on this attitude of answering yes, no to a question, you can propose billions of models and none of them would be better than the other, okay? That's why you need quantitative aspects. You need a quantitative validation. This thing is still missing. It is actually my focus here. So is it possible to validate this approach? to build a phenomenology of social dynamics. We should do that. We should stick to the data, like we did for elections, for instance. It can be done in other environments, I would tell you, and try to get regular behaviors at a quantitative level. I give you two examples here. One example is that we took care of personally, so a contribution we gave about elections, the plot that you see at the beginning, some more detailed explanation. And another one concerning some extreme phenomena which take place in society due to some, if you want, mass social pressure. Like, for instance, I don't know, the boom of products on the market, like mobile phones, for instance, or things like the decrease of birth rates in European countries. These things have been modeled, and you find also in this case, behind the complexity which stays behind this, behind the number of local factors which affect each individual phenomenon, you can find some kind of regular behavior between some points. So these are the two examples. The first example is about elections. It's, of course, a large-scale social phenomenon, the ideal phenomenon for us, because there are millions of people who vote at the same time. Okay, so pretty much the ideal. And there is lots of available data. There are many ministers of inner affairs which made their data publicly available. Okay? In fact, we were lucky, because the Italian Minister of Internal Affairs made public this data just 2 months before we started this investigation. So it was much very easy for us just to get to access the whole archive of the last 60 years of election data. And you know, in Italy, they vote very frequently. You know, they are, you know, governments are not really so it's a lot of data. So the whole story started in 1998, but then, I mean, the thing was published in 1999 by this Brazilian group. So we are not the first one to look at elections in this respect, and we should give credit to the people who deserve it. By this group of people, Costafiglio et al., that made the first analysis of distribution, did the same thing that I showed before. So how many candidates get how many votes in Brazilian elections. So B, that you see here in the log scale in this case, is the number of votes received by a candidate. On the y-axis, you have the number of candidates who get B votes. It's a classical histogram, okay? And you make the histogram across all the candidates you have, winners or losers, any party, anything. You just take them all, and you make this histogram. Make the histogram, what they found, these are now elections, you know, Brazil is divided into states. There is a local parliament, there is a federal parliament, okay? So you do these things for these two elections. One of them is this one is for the elections in the state of São Paulo, which is still, I mean, like more than 20 million people living there. And this is for the all federal elections. They found this interesting pattern here, kind of in the central part of the plot, with a apparently 1/V behavior, kind of hyperbolic decay. And then, of course, there are discrepancies at the beginning or the end, because it's kind of a stream phenomenon. People are voted just by their parents, and people instead are just, you know, the big front runners. So that was actually what stimulated a lot of interest about this. So that in a successive paper by the same authors, they redid the analysis also for the elections 2002, before it was the election 1998. And you see here the comparison. So in 4 years, they found the same thing. This is for state deputy of São Paulo. This is for the whole country. Okay. Again, interesting. So you have reproducibility over time, something that physicists like very much. You say, okay, probably the same thing is happening in any case. Okay.
So do you have a comment? I mean, here there really seems to be a line, and then the first graph you showed there was curvature.
Let me see. No, it's really the same curve. There is a different meaning.
The very, very first slide.
Oh yeah, in my slide.
Yeah.
But that's a different thing. I mean, it's not the same election. So. I will explain. I mean, there is a difference. In fact, there is a problem with this analysis. Okay.
But the problem I see is
here
they have a line.
They're
different. Yeah, here they have a line.
And you don't have one.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Let me come to that.
Different parameters entirely.
No, I mean, actually, it's a different analysis. It's an entirely different analysis. I will show you, actually, this analysis doesn't make sense. Okay, so just to make sure that you don't need even to think about it.
Okay.
I didn't want to be so brutal, but the authors are not here.
The y-axis is
what? So, y-axis is the number of candidates which get B votes.
But
I'm
only ordering all y-axis.
Okay, so it's a histogram. How are you ordering what?
So, higher y-value means
that there are many candidates getting few votes, and there are few candidates getting a lot of votes. Of course, you have few winners, and all the others are losers. Okay?
Can't both candidates?
Because it's an upper limit, these are a few thousands. Okay? Because, you know, most people are just elected by the family. friends, and this is more or less. The real successful candidates are here, okay? And then there is a book behavior. But they were interested in what happens in the middle, just because they found this very nice straight line. And that's actually why we got curious about this. And other people got curious about this. There were other examples, so the very same analysis done in different countries. This is, for instance, India, several Indian states. The fits are not really fantastic, but I mean, at least you can see there is a minimal consistency with what the guys found before. I mean, these are not my thoughts. I would never dare to present these kind of things. And again, so not only this one of a new behavior is reproducible in Brazil, but it seems to be kind of transversal. This at least was the conclusion at that time. So is it universal? Is it the same thing everywhere? No. So this is actually our plot now. With the same thing, the very same thing. So again, this is number of votes. It's renormalized. It's divided by the total number of votes. That's why you see numbers smaller than one here, okay? Because that's what they did. They divide this V, so how many votes gets a candidate, by the total number of votes given to candidates. That's why this number is smaller than one. But on the y-axis, we normalize the probability, but it's again the number of candidates getting V votes. We did this for Brazil. Actually, this is a Brazilian curve. We didn't even find this actually one of a new behavior, but okay, let's forget about this. What is clear from this picture is that you don't really find a universal pattern here. And the thing is that, you know, now it's obvious for us because we spent some time thinking about this. But the thing was kind of obvious because this analysis doesn't really make sense. I mean, in the analysis that they analyzed before, they were making a single histogram out of all candidates taking part in the electoral competition, independently of the party they were in, which means they were candidates of big parties, which of course usually get many more votes, a lot of votes, not because they're smart, but just because, I don't know, the secretary of the party is very popular. No? Like, for instance, in Italy, Berlusconi's party is very big, so any of his candidates would be very popular in each constituency, even if the cat is an idiot, okay? Which is usually the case. So it's kind of unfair. You're not really modeling how good the candidates are, because what it is big, you know, advantage given or disadvantage given by their belonging to one party or not. So we're thinking then, since, I mean, this support by the parties is fluctuating a lot, it's not predictable, how can you predict it? Besides, it's really very local. I mean, it really depends how strong the party is that year in that country, okay? We don't want to do this because this is not our kind of stuff. But if we model the competition of candidates of the same party, then you can probably get something interesting. And that's actually what we did. Because in this case, the party is giving the equal advantage or disadvantage to everyone. So if you pick one of them, you do it not because it belongs to that party, because they all belong to the same party, but because, for instance, that candidate's more or less active in convincing people, okay, in his action. So you can forget about the party, make a party-independent analysis, and maybe get something. That's how we got actually our universal pattern. With a model which explains this behavior. So this is the new analysis we proposed, which was recently published in Physical Review Letters. This is a reference, together with my friend and co-worker Claudio Castellano at the University of Rome. We studied those elections in which this analysis is possible. Elections in which you can choose between many candidates of the same party. These elections are proportional elections with open lists. There are several countries in which people vote this way. Finland and Poland vote exactly this way, I mean, even now. Italy has voted this way till up to 1992. Now, I mean, they changed the system. Now it's proportional, but with closed list, which means that you can choose the party, but not the candidate, okay? So voters are not free of choosing the candidate, because the candidates are ranked by the party, and according to how many votes the party gets, then, I mean, you just scroll down the list until you include all the candidates on the left, okay? And what we wanted to model in this case to study was the distribution of votes for candidates within a party. So like you see, it's a different thing to do before. We don't put everything in the same place, okay? Because it doesn't make sense. So what we have now, since we are focusing on lists of candidates of the same party, in principle is a function of three variables. This P is a histogram, function of the number of votes received by candidates. Big Q is the number of party candidates which are in that list. Big N is the total number of votes of that party. So how many votes in total these Q guys got, okay? So these things are always there. For each constituency, there are several parties which present their list. Their list usually are characterized by different values of Q, which are more or less of the order of 10, 20, 50, you know, more or less this number. But N, of course, is different. I mean, N can be very different because if the party is very big, N is of the order of 100,000 voters. If the party is very small, the candidate is independent, then, I mean, of course, you have you can have a few thousand votes. It depends, okay, it fluctuates. So we're expecting a dependence on these three numbers. And then we came with a number of surprise parties. First of all, this is not a function of three variables, but it's a function of two variables. We made this kind of test here. We fixed the ratio between N and Q. Fixing, considering that we don't have big statistics, means basically you fix a window for this ratio, which you call B0. A window, you know, of the same order. So like 10,000. Sorry. Oops. Oh, I lost it. Oh, yeah.
So you do this constituency by constituency.
Yeah.
And then you group them by size.
Yeah.
Is that what you do?
Yeah, that's what we think. And so in this case, you fix the window, we say, okay, we're fixing B0. Yeah. We have, of course, when we consider to make this histogram, we have just a few thousand candidates. For instance, for Finland, we have 2,000. At most, we have 10,000, including them all. Okay. You block the value of B0, and then you check, you know, the two possible, you separate the data in two groups, no? Bigger and smaller than some value for N. And then you see that you get the same curve. So there is no real dependence on N. Okay. It depends really on B and B0. Because you see this is the same plot. And for instance, these two things have are characterized by the same value of B0, by different values of N, but it's the same. And the same if you change the window. This was the first surprise. Second surprise is that this is not even a function of two variables, but it's a function of a single variable, which is even more stunning. And the variable is this combination BQ divided by N. So B divided by B0, if you want. In this case, what we did, of course, you fix the values of this thing here. In several cases, so you just kind of, you know, filter your data set, and then you see, of course, there are fluctuations because you have just a few hundreds in this case, no? So you can really make a clean histogram. But the signal is kind of clear, as you can see. So this histogram, which is supposed to be a function of three numbers, is a function of one number only. This was already a big thing, because we didn't expect that, in a sense. And the biggest surprise of all is that this histogram is not only the function of a single variable, but it's the same function in all data sets that we consider. The same function in Italy since 1958, 1987. We have many more data sets. We don't just put it in this curve here, because, you know, since, I mean, symbols are very big and so on, it wouldn't have a nice visual effect. But we have many more data this kind. In fact, we want to have more data. Finland voted this year, Poland voted 2 weeks ago. So I mean, maybe, you know, we'd like to have, of course, the new histogram and see if they still fit this in this pattern. Okay? So this scaling function is universal. And if you make a fit, you realize that it's a log normal. This is the log normal fit you see there. Okay? For those who are not familiar, a log normal is this function here. It's a function. So, sorry. Yeah. It's a distribution such that, you know, the logarithm of the variable is distributed according to a Gaussian. Okay, that's why you have the log here, not just the x. And this x here, because of the differential. You have two parameters here to characterize this. But by construction, in our case, since the average value of this variable is 1, there is a natural constraint between these two variables. So that actually, sigma squared is equal to minus 2 mu, as you can see here. So there is actually only one free parameter, not two, just by construction. But still, I mean, there is no obvious reasons why this parameter should be the same in different countries, right? Besides, further analysis about local elections held to elect the mayor of Rome 1997 or 2006, so almost 10 years later, and in São Paulo and Rio de Janeiro, you see that, okay, apart from discrepancies at the beginning, but usually you're interested in the decay of the histogram is the same. Okay, this is something we're still working on. It's not actually part of the paper we already published. Okay, this is the very same histogram. Okay, B0 is this Q this N divided by Q we've seen before. This is the very same histogram. So this is interesting. Please, Justin?
Would the variations in the beginning just be due to, like, the obstacle to entry in the election? So if you can have write-in candidates versus you have to actually show up and fill out a form and et cetera? Or how does that work? So, like, there's a large number of variants at the very bottom end. So So some in some countries there's a lot of people running to get one or two votes, whereas in other in other countries there's
The thing is that, you know, in this case, these are the guys who get very few votes. And this is kind of different. I mean, very difficult for us to model in any case, because there are so much fluctuation. The fluctuation basically takes you just already to zero. Because getting three votes and getting zero votes for us is exactly the same. So the real interesting behavior is for a large number of votes. So this decay. That's why we're happy to find that the decay at least. And actually, in my case, I was even surprised to see that the collapse of the curves was so precise from the beginning to the end. When you have, like, you know, the power, when you say the power law decay of the degree distribution of a network, you don't have a power law at the beginning. You usually start with the plateau, and then you have, you know. So what counts is the behavior of the tail, so the extreme events, the really rich guys, okay? So the conclusion of this analysis here is it's an invitation to model this thing, because we found the same behavior in different countries and years in spite of history, economy, you know, cultures, languages, and so on. So the dynamics must be elementary. There must be something simple behind this. We have our own explanation. You're free of proposing other explanations. So we hope that, I don't know, this can inspire someone. Of course, when you do such a thing, I mean, it's kind of natural to get some attention by Popular Science. This is a very nice news story that Mark Buchanan wrote for The New Scientist a couple of weeks back, natural pattern behind our votes. And another nice one, within the physics world, this is more related to the model, since we propose a model based on networking, so who convinces who, the friends of the friends convince other friends, and so on. That's, you know, that's why, that's the reason of this happened here. Let me now show you the second example. So we are fully responsible for the things I told you so far. I'm telling instead, I mean, of something else, just because, you know, it's in the interest of the field to do things like this. So not only what we've just done, but also what actually was already done in 2004, the paper that I discovered only recently, by Michard and Bouchot, European Physical Journal B, if you want, I can give you the reference. And this is actually a completely different matter. So they were interested in seeing, in monitoring, sudden changes in society, in this case, in opinions of society. For instance, you know, I mean, probably, and you will see, actually, you see the curve, that when mobile phones were introduced, like beginning of the 90s, basically very few people had a mobile phone. You were lucky to have a friend, mobile phone, which is usually a very big thing that you need to drag, you know. It's very heavy and so on. And then within a few years, but quite rapidly, everybody had two mobile phones. Okay? So this is kind of, you know, a sudden change in society. It's called collective opinion shifts. These kind of things, which look again very complex, which are the product of a number of factors, instead, this guy showed it can be simply modeled. I mean, there is an aspect of this, of course, not the whole story, an aspect of this which is universal, and which includes not only like sales, so consumer behavior, but also things like decay of birth rates in different countries, I will show you that, or decreasing intensity of applauses in concert halls, measures that they did personally. But among the other examples I could quote, if you see crowd panic, and suddenly, you know, there is an alarm, and then everybody is in panic, and then, sorry, yeah, please.
I just have a comment about cell phones. So NTT, the Japanese telephone company, did a large examination of cell phone usage around the year 2000, and they found that about 50% of observed phone calls were not observed phone calls. There were people pretending to make phone calls simply for the purpose of impressing. 50% is just an unbelievable number.
Indeed.
What is
yeah.
Society?
Yeah. Yeah. So think about that. No?
Yeah.
But there are also examples, you know, even more serious, like, you know, financial crashes. It would be nice to be able to predict such a thing, you know? So that, I mean, you can sell your stock option as soon as possible. Economic crisis, or boom, a new product, and so on. So there are many things that in principle you say, okay, this is totally unpredictable. I mean, I have no clue how to do this. In fact, even experts don't do this. I mean, I don't say that physicists are able to do that. I'm thinking about special quantitative aspects of this phenomena that is possible to model. I mean, we don't have any ambition of replacing or doing the job of other categories of scientists. This is not our intention. So this is the model that they propose. It's a very simple model. You have binary choices, plus one and minus one. Let's say I buy a mobile phone, I don't buy a mobile phone. I stick to this example. There are three ingredients. Each agent I has a personal opinion of phi I. It's an attitude. Like, you know, I'm a guy that usually like to buy everything new coming in the market. Even if it's completely useless, I never use it. Okay? So So in this case, this phi I is very high. It's a real number, so it can be very high in positive, very low in negative. And there's some distribution R phi, which is an arbitrary function. Okay, it can be flat, can be Gaussian, can be whatever you want. You will see that the behavior is independent on the shape of this curve, as long as it is regular. Then there is public information. I don't buy a telephone. I mean, somebody must tell me that there is a new product in the market, must advertise, must convince me. Okay? Shows very nice spots, naked women, I mean, then I find it, and I find it attractive, and I buy it. Also, this one can be modeled by a simple function of time. At the beginning, it's low, because, of course, there are few mobile phones, this thing is starting to enter the market, and then, of course, there are many more providers, and so on. There's a big competition. There are spots about mobile phones 24 hours a day. So it varies with t, and it's also a real number between minus infinity and plus infinity, acting on all agents, because everybody's influenced by this, okay, in various ways, but everybody feels this pressure. And then there is social pressure. All my friends have a mobile phone. Maybe I should buy one. At least I can phone them, I can talk to them. So these are the three ingredients. And the intensity of this pressure, accepted by my friends, basically, is given by coupling Jij. In our case, we assume the kind of mean field behavior that J is the same, okay? It's the same for all agents. It doesn't depend on I and J. Okay? It's simple. So what you have, it looks complicated, but it's very simple. These are the three ingredients that I showed you before. This is the final decision at time t that agent I takes, buying or not buying a mobile phone, which is a combination of factors. This is his individual propensity to do the purchase. Okay? It's a real number, like I said before. Everybody is given this number at the beginning of the process, which does not change, it's not time dependent. Then, of course, there is an influence by the media, which advertise these things, which is time dependent, which increases in time, which is actually one of the reasons of this sudden change of behavior, or this opinion shift. And then there is the influence of my friends here. You see, there is a sum over all my friends, and this is what they decided to do. Okay, this is what my friend Jay did at the time t minus one. Okay. Then what I do to monitor the state of the whole society, I sum this one is a real number, of course, it can be positive or negative. Is it positive, then at time t, Si buys the phone, otherwise keeps having no phone. Okay? So this is a real number. Is it positive or negative? Then I take all these Si, which are then plus or minus one, I sum them, I take the average, and this gives me a measure of the success, in this case of mobile phones. Okay? If this number is minus one, it means that nobody has mobile phone. If this number is plus one, it probably means that everybody has two mobile phones. Okay? But certainly that everybody bought at least one mobile phone. So how do you follow this process in time? This is the difference, for instance, with the elections we've seen before. In the elections, we just have a picture of what happened on election day. Okay? Here, instead, we can monitor the election. So before, it was an analysis about static behavior. Here, we have an analysis about dynamic. In this respect, it's even more intriguing. They should also have the data, which allow you to follow this evolution in time. But these two guys have a lot of money, so they have this data. So you vary this field F, this number, from minus infinity to plus infinity, and then you see how O changes with F. This is actually nothing but the so-called random fieldizing model at t equal to zero, for those who have a minimum physics background, but the label doesn't matter. It's just what I told you. But if you want to know more, we can take a look at this very nice paper written on Nature by Jim Setna et al. Actually, Jim Setna was 1 month at ISI with us, a very nice guy. And he did a lot, actually, to study this system, to describe, among the other things, so-called phenomenon of crackling noise. But Michel Bouchot used it to model financial collective shifts, opinion shifts. What you have here, so this is our field, which changes from minus infinity to plus infinity. This is the so-called order parameter, like I said, the average number of people buying phone. And you see, so what you see from the model, this answer can be studied, you see that there is at some point there is a sudden jump. How sudden the jump is depends on the value of J, of the influence of my friends. Okay? If the J is close to a critical value, JC, there is a sudden jump. There is a sudden number of people, like you know, big group of people that instantaneously switch to the I buy the phone mode. Okay?
And just on that, the fringe, influence of the fringe, how is that, was it regular lattice or is that an AI graph? Or
this is mean field.
This is mean field.
Yeah, this is mean field. That's why also J is independent on IJ. Okay. But the thing is that, I mean, there are nice universal properties, which are the reasons why the two guys were inspired to use the main result of this analysis, which is shown in the next slide, to model these things in general. Because then you don't need to know so much about the social structure around you, about, you know, the intensity of the power bond or their bonds. Okay, this is the good thing. You find some kind of striking feature which is independent of many degrees of freedom that your system has. So if you are just before this critical value, I'm afraid I destroyed this. Okay. What you see is that the variation, the derivative of this number that you've seen before, this number in time, the derivative of this has a kind of, it's a universal function. This can be proved. It was proved by this guy. So if you want to know details, if you have not the necessary background to understand this, but I don't care about this because I don't even know how they did it. So. But you can take a look at the paper I showed you before. But the important thing here is that this epsilon is the difference between the actual parameter, J, describing the intensity of the social pressure, and this critical number. But the important thing here is that this G of X, this function here, which tells you then that the rate of change of this O in time, is a universal function. Does not depend on how you assign the initial propensities of it. Okay? So what you have here, just to make it clear, if you make the derivative of the curve I showed before, then of course you have a rising thing, then you have a sudden variation, and then of course a decrease, because then you have everybody's got a mobile phone, there is no change anymore. Okay? This is the height of the peak. This is the width of the peak. And there is a characteristic, the relation between these two numbers in the random fieldizing model. That's a physics, actually, background needed to understand this. The only thing which comes out of all this story is that the simple model predicts that there is a relation between the height of the peak and the width. So what do you want to do in if you have data? First of all, you assume that this phenomena of sudden success, you know, boom of a product, financial crisis, or these things that you can model, that these are occurring near criticality, so that you're near to the regime where you can have this universal behavior. This is an assumption, okay? And what you hope is that you want to recover this peak from the data. You want to see whether indeed there is this relation between the height of the peak and the width of the peak from real data. Okay, so I'll show you actually more in detail what I want to do. So this is, suppose it's the number of people who buy mobile phones. Nobody has a mobile phone, everybody has two mobile phones. In a short time, in a few years, you take the derivative of this, you get kind of bell-shaped curve like this, and then you wonder if this is true. So this is what they did. And then they could do this because they had the data. And I'll show you now which kind of data they had. They had data about birth rates in Europe. There was a sudden drop, as you can see here. This is Germany and Portugal. Starting from 1960-something, actually end of the 1960s, actually when we were born, it was again the last shot. There was a sudden drop here. Just again, of course, different in the two countries. Then what they did, they made derivatives. Of course, these are numerical derivatives. They are very noisy, as you can see here. So these are the derivatives of this, which are, in this case, going down, because you start from the top and you go to the bottom. Okay? For the two countries. So the crosses is Germany, the squares is Portugal. Okay. But they made a nice Gaussian fit of this, as you can see here. The two curves are quite different. You see, this is quite pronounced as a peak. This is not. And the other thing, they had this data about the diffusion of mobile phones in Europe. Several countries, because they, you know, they use this data to make economic, like, you know, forecasts for marketing purposes. They had France, Germany, UK, Spain, Italy. Over a number, you see, not even 10 years, they could see this sudden increment. And again, of course, if you do the numerical derivative year by year, but for, I think in this case, probably even every 3 months, you get, of course, some fluctuating thing, okay? Obviously, because there is noise. But then they made a fit of this, like they did it before, for the birth rate data, and they got this. And if you put all these numbers that you get for each country, for each event, on the same plot, like they did here, both birth rates and cell phones, they got this relation, H, proportion. So this is the height of the peak versus the width of the peak. In log-log scale, you get a nice regression, linear regression here, which is actually the expected regression. You see, H. So actually, this is exponent 62, which is about 2/3. Okay, very nice result. Very nice result. I mean, I just discovered it recently, but it's kind of goes to the same kind of, you know, of direction. I'm trying to find it is a very complex behavior, but you can find simple things out of this. Okay. So other evidence, like I said, this is the kind of the starting point of this effort to make things more quantitative. So what can we do next? We can analyze other electrons, which is actually more or less what we are doing now. Not only proportional, which we can try to get more data. Like I showed you some preliminary results on local elections for mayor in different towns around the world. You can study consumer behavior, like these two guys, Michaud and Bouchot, did, not only for mobile phones and not necessarily the same kind of dynamics, because by now I would say this is quite well understood. They found a very nice, striking result. I don't think you can do better than that in this respect. You can analyze the web user behavior in the sense that these are actually things that we kind of did, you know, together with Filippo, I mean, already starting 2 years ago. You can see how people really move on the web as users. Or even better, or complementary to that, you can make experiments based on the web, just because the web allows you to collect the responses of many people. You can ask them to do tasks, you can even promise a prize for them for their effort, and then you can collect data this way. You can ask them to choose in a menu, many things. This is probably the future of these things. So let me conclude with an outlook. What did we learn today? Which are the take-home messages? The distribution of the number of votes received by candidates of the same party in proportional elections, so with open list where you can really model these things, is a universal curve. You know why? We have model. It's not necessarily the best explanation, but it's a very nice question. So why should it be like this? In 1958, there was not even television, in a sense. There was no advertising, very few people reading newspapers. So now there is even the internet. All this does not seem to matter. Not for this. Second message is, collective opinion shifts are characterized by a well-defined way, a universal pattern of change, or variation of the speed of change. This nice relation between the height of the peak and the width of the peak. What we need to do, we need to look for more things of this kind. If you find more things of this kind, you feel authorized to use simple modeling to describe these things, even if you're not a sociologist. Actually, even better if you're a physicist or a computer scientist or an applied mathematician. If you're interested in these kind of things, this kind of new, growing and increasingly attractive field, there is a recent review that we just completed 2 weeks ago together with Claudio Castellano, which was actually my co-author in the election paper, and Vittorio Loreto from the University of Rome. You can find it here. This is the link. It's the only one existing. It covers not only opinion dynamics, as you see, there is cultural dynamics, there is language dynamics. There are other issues like crowd behavior, how hierarchies form, human dynamics, like behavior, like, you know, how people answer to emails, you know, statistics of individual, single individual, social spreading phenomena, like, you know, rumor spreading, information spreading, and much more. So thank you very much for your attention.